So hi everyone. My name is Sarah Gordon. I'm not Kimmy Shurim here. I lead Unpacked for Educators, which is a division of Open Door Media. We do Israel education with schools around the globe. Previously, I taught and ran programming at Maayanot Yeshiva High School in Teaneck, New Jersey, which is where I live with my family, though I did grow up in Montreal, so there's a little bit of a Canadian connection here. I want to thank Torah in Motion. I want to thank Rabbi Kelman for inviting me to speak, and really to thank all of you for joining us tonight. Okay, so tonight we're going to be talking about the story of Yosef, which starts off in this week's Parshat Vayeshev. So I personally, I really love teaching about Yosef. The narratives are so rich. There's all the family dynamics, the character arcs. There's so much to learn and unpack, and I'm really excited to do that together tonight. And the Yosef narrative, it starts off in Perek Lamed Zayin, in Perek 37, which is the beginning of our Parsha this week. And it basically goes to the end of Sefer Bereishit. The beginning of this source sheet over here, I really just kind of drew out a chart so you can kind of keep track of all the different aspects of the story as we go through it together, because there's really a lot going on. And you can see over here, right, we start off this week's Parsha, Perek Lamed Zayin. We have Yosef and his brothers, the evil reports, the dreams, the plot to kill him, and he's sold to Egypt. Then there's an interruption, the story of Yehuda and Tamar. We jump then to Perek 39, Lamed Tet. We have Yosef in Potiphar's house, the whole incident with Eshet Potiphar. He gets thrown in jail. He rises to success. Then again, we have the dreams, more dreams over here, the cupbearer, the chief baker. Yosef interprets, right? One is released, but he forgets Yosef, even though he's supposed to, try to call on him to try to get him out. Then we have Paro's dreams, the interpretation, Yosef's rise to power. And finally, the last chapters of Sefer Bereishit, where, well beyond our Parsha at this point, is everything with Yosef and the brothers, where it really comes full circle. They meet in Egypt. There's the, Yosef kind of sending them, to go back and get Binyamin. There's a whole test. Finally, the great revelation. Yosef explains that, he really is the long lost brother, and the brothers return and tell Yaakov. So there's really a lot going on, and there's so many different directions you can take the stories of Yosef. And what I wanted to do tonight, though, is really focus on one specific aspect. And I wanted to use our Parsha as a springboard to look at the arc of Yosef's character, his character growth, his rises and falls, his journey to power, and really journey to the person that he needs to be. We're not going to talk so much about, everything that happens later on between him and his brothers when they get to Egypt. We'll save that for the future Parsha Shears, coming up in the different weeks. But really here to think about his growth as a leader, as a character in Tanakh. And it's really, for Yosef, it's going to be a long road to success. So what I want us to do is we're going to go through the different sections of the text that deal with Yosef's journey. And I want us to keep a few questions in mind as we learn through the text. So number one is the sale of Yosef. This is a pivotal event in Jewish history and Jewish identity. In fact, on Yom Kippur, during Musaf, when we read of the Aseret Harugei Malchut, the 10 rabbis who are martyred, the Piyut states this is happening because the rabbis are being held responsible by the Romans for this sale, almost in absence of the brothers. So what events lead to this infamous sale, and who's responsible? Is it the brothers? Is it Yaakov? Is Yosef totally innocent and the victim, or does he also have some responsibility here as well? Oh, here, I'll post the source sheet again for people who just joined. Here we go. Number two, what are the role of dreams, which feature so prominently in these stories? And why does Yosef have to endure such a long and torturous journey to his rise to power, to his redemption? Is he the victim? It seems like he's the victim here and being sold, but he can never really catch a break. He's always going from one pit to another, the physical pit to jails to up and down. And ultimately, what do these chapters teach us about the arc of his character and his growth over the course of the story? So with that, let's dive in. And let's start off really with the beginning of this week's Parsha. And we'll read it together. I'm going to read parts of the Hebrew and I'll translate, and you can follow along in either way. And then I'm going to pause and we'll have some questions for us to discuss, and we'll take it from there. So here we go. So this is really our introduction to Yosef. So number one, we start off, right, telling us about Yaakov. Yeah, here's Yaakov's son. So we'll jump here to Pasuk Bet, to verse two. We're told Yosef is 17 years old and he's working in the, he's a shepherd here with his brothers. Vayavo Yosef et dibatam ra'a el avihem. Here, Sepharia translated as he was a helper to the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, and we'll see that Na'ar maybe could mean something else. And he's bringing bad reports. He's reporting all the different things that they're doing, reporting back, slandering them to his father. Goes on, Pasuk Gimel, Ve'Yisrael ahavet Yosef mikol banav, ki ben zikunim hu, hulo, ve'asa lo k'tonet pasim. Yosef is the child of Yaakov's old age. Yaakov loves him, best of all his sons, and he makes him a special coat. He continues on. And now we're told the dream. So pasuk hey, vaychalom Yosef chalom vayeged le'achav vayosifu otznoto. He dreams a dream. He tells his brothers, and it makes them hate him even more. And then he tells them, "Let me tell you this dream that I dreamed." So pasuk zayin, we'll skip to pasuk 7 over here. These again, very well-known dreams. And he says, listen, we're all, working, binding sheaves. My sheaf stands straight up, and all of yours come and they bow to mine. But Yamrulo Achiv, Hamaloch Timloch Alenu, Are you? And the brothers say to him, their reaction, I think maybe he was hoping for a different reaction, unclear exactly what reaction he thought this dream would get him. And the brothers respond, do you think you're going to rule over us? What is this? You're going to be the king? Vayasifu od snow oto al chalmotav al dvarav. And they hate him even more because of his talk of these dreams. Then he has another dream and he decides to tell his brothers again. He didn't really seem to, irrespective of the reaction he got to his first dream. Now he's like, here we're going. I'm going to tell him the second dream anyways. And he says, here's the other dream. We'll start at the beginning of Pasuk Tet, Pasuk 9. The sun, the moon, and 11 stars are bowing to me. And this time, it's not just his brothers, right? He tells it to his father also. And his father actually berates him, right? Kind of gets a little bit upset and says over here, like, what is this dream? You think, and again, the interpretation, at least Yaakov's interpretation, right, is that who are the sun, the moon, and all the stars, right? It's the family. So he's like, I and your mother, who, by the way, has passed away at this point, right? Rachel has passed away, and all your brothers are going to bow down to you? What's going on? And finally, this arc ends over here, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayiknubo Echav. The brothers become even more jealous. Ve'aviv shamar et hadavar. And his father keeps the matter in mind. So I want to pause for a second. And I'm curious, what do you can pause, you can respond in the chat if you want to unmute yourself, that's fine as well. What do you notice here about what we're told about Yosef? How does his character appear to you so far? What do you notice from the text? You're thinking about everything we saw so far in this text. What have you noticed so far about Yosef's character?
He's naive. He's not humble.
Okay, very good, right? Not exactly so helpful here. Anything else? Thank you so much. Anyone else want to add to that? Anything else that you've noticed about Yosef here? You can feel free to post in the
He's
chat. Oh,
outspoken.
very good.
He's outspoken, and he apparently has some dreams. Maybe the dreams are real dreams, or maybe he makes them up.
Okay, very good, right? He's not afraid to, right, speaking his mind over here. Unclear where these dreams are coming from. I see, right, Joyce has posted also, right? He seems very self-centered here as well, for sure. Anyone else want to add to any of this?
Sure, he's very much
Insensitive and pompous and insensitive.
Okay, pompous and insensitive, for sure. Sorry, I think someone else was
He's
speaking also.
yes, sorry about that. Yes, he's very much alone. His mother has died. His father is probably stretched thin at this point with all his burgeoning responsibilities. He doesn't see him, doesn't seem to see him very much or much contact, and he does the typical thing that fathers do, or parents do when they don't spend time with the child. He gives an expensive gift to compensate,
Right,
and not
right.
certainly not the most appropriate gift considering the social awkwardness and what's happening. It's probably the worst possible gift he could have given, making him stand out. And here's poor Joseph, who seems to have grown up alone. Look who he's working. He's not even his own a shepherd, in his
Interesting.
own right. He is
Right.
a shepherd to who? the concubine's sons, an assistant shepherd, if you will.
Yeah.
And even further along, so that's how distant and apart he is, which could
Yeah.
explain the social awkwardness, the immaturity. He's grown up alone with no one to help him. And then where are we here? The one person that seems to care about him, who doesn't may not be there very often, is his father. And what has he done? He's just berated him in front of
Yeah.
all of his brothers,
For sure.
further isolating him. So this is
Yeah.
where we are right now in the story.
I think that's a great point. Thank you for sharing that, right? That it's, and I think as the kind of themes that I'm hearing from everyone over here, right? There's a certain kind of immaturity, right? Self-centeredness. And I think what you're adding, which is really important perspective, is almost like, well, where does this come from? You know, what do we know about his family situation, about how he's growing up? You know, what could kind of lead to this? For sure. And I think it's important for us to remember, right? Even as we, you know, Yosef's here in Tanakh for us to analyze, and we're going to see how he grows as a character. But he's 17, right? And for those of us who have spent time with 17-year-olds, right? 17-year-olds are not always known for their great, great maturity, you know, yet. They're emerging adults, right? They're getting there. And I think over here, we really see a little bit of this immaturity. And I'll just, as we continue down with the source sheet, right? Source number two over here, when it said that Behunar Ebnei Bilha Vizilpa, right? The Sephardic translation has said, oh, like he's like the helpmate, right? Rashi actually takes a different kind of twist over here and says, Shehaya Osem Maaseh Na'arut, right? What does it mean, Nar? That he acted like a Nar, he acted like a kid. What was he doing, right? He was childish. He would like, you know, do his hair, and he would like make sure that he was looking good and was a little bit more vain. I think we also see, right, the idea that Dibra Ra'ah, that he's bringing these bad reports to his father. It's almost like he's trying to curry favor. It almost seems also to me kind of the curious thing is he's almost like needling his brothers with the dreams. Like he doesn't get, you know, he doesn't read the room from the first time, but they really don't like the dreams. It's not really winning him any favor. And he's like, no, there's a sequel, right? And he feels like he wants to add that as well. Definitely, I don't think it helps that Yaakov seems to outwardly favor him, right? As people pointed out, right? He's the favored son. The text explicitly tells us that he's given this coat of many colors. And Shmuel Bet, Tamar, who's the sister of Amnon, right? Also has a special coat. It's like a sign of royalty. And again, there's really this kind of, you know, almost the sense that he's being groomed for this higher purpose, right? To maybe succeed his father, right? And the brothers are sensing this. They're picking up on this.
How do they relate to Bnei Leah?
Pardon?
How does he relate to Bnei Leah?
So we're gonna see that as well, right? Kind of here we have, so far we're only told of Bilha and Zilpah. Like we don't kind of see that, you know, that later on we're going to see kind of the Yosef facing off, you know, against Yehuda, right, or Reuven, and you see kind of that split, right, the Bnei Rachel and the Bnei Leah. So it's definitely something to a lens to keep in mind, you know, as we read through the story. But again, over here, I think for here's the last point really about the dreams is this idea that the content of the dreams, it's interesting that everyone seems to assume at this point, Yosef and the brothers and the father, that these dreams mean that Yosef is going to rule. They all see it as Yosef taking some sort of role. Maybe it means that he's first going to rule the brothers, right, with the sheaves, and then maybe he's going to rule the whole family, or maybe even the whole world, right? What could it be? The sun, the moon, the stars. And there's this, from the brothers, the jealousy or the hate that's coming really doesn't seem to be coming from like, this is never going to happen, but a real nervousness that this dream coming true isn't out of the realm of possibility. And nobody seems to give another interpretation of the dream. On one end is source number three, the Ramban comes and, you know, interprets Yaakov's rebuke as almost like, you know, over here, we'll read it. Eich nish'ach livech l'chalom ha'chalom hazeh, ein zeh ki'im gova lev v'na'arut she'alu dvarim ke'ila alavavcha. But the Ramban sees, you know, Yaakov rebuking Yosef as kind of like, how could you dream such a dream, right? It's because you're like a kid and you're just thinking, you know, imagining random things. But at the same time, you know, it's not so crazy, right? He's the favored son in the chosen coat. Why wouldn't he think that he was destined to rule, right? Especially if we think of the themes throughout Sefer Bereishit of one person being chosen and one person and one brother, you know, being kind of pushed away. And if we look at source four, I thought this was actually fascinating, where Shimshon Raphael Hirsch actually sees in Yosef great potential. And this is really what we're going to be seeing throughout his journey. There's at the beginning this immaturity, right? And he's not really reading the room, maybe a little bit of self-centeredness. But there's also great potential here. And Rav Hirsch says the following, it's remarkable that he should have dreamt of binding sheaves. That was something with which ordinarily they had no connection, for they were shepherds. To become an agricultural people stood for them still as their destiny in the distant future. If agriculture was so much in his mind that he even dreamt of it, the brothers were justified in thinking that could only be due to the teaching and information given to him by his father Israel over the expected national destiny of the house. And what I thought was so interesting here, where Hirsch is saying that, you know, that what's the family business is taking care of sheep. But what are his dreams, right? He's thinking long term. He's thinking of binding sheaves. He's like the classic. I feel like the person in the movies who like dreams of like, you know, getting out of this, you know, limited dreams and trying to push forward to the future. There's clearly a lot of potential. And again, it really seems like, you know, we said before, you know, maybe Yaakov is, you know, poo-pooing what he said or rebuking him that, you know, these are just childish dreams. But the end of this parak, he says, or the end of this section, he says, "Aviv shamar tadavar." His father keeps the matter. And there really seems to be this sense of everyone's take of these dreams. So we're going to see it's not actually what they mean later on when we see it at the end of the story, is that Yosef's going to rule at some point. And as we said, there really seems to be great potential with Yosef, but also a lot of immaturity. He's not reading the room. He doesn't know how to interact with his brothers. I learned this year from doing a few interviews that, you know, whenever you do interviews, you want to distinguish between hard skills and soft skills, right? Kind of like the hard skills that people know, do they know how to do the job, right? What's their talent? Can they project manage? Do they have tech skills, you know? But then there's the soft skills, teamwork, professionalism, empathy, plays well with others, right? And I think here, you know, are they a good listener? Can they read the room? And I think here with Yosef, you have a little bit more of the first, but it's the other where there's really more of a challenge. Great. And I see, right, Sima posted, right, it's not just to rule, destined to provide sustenance. Amazing. We're going to come back to that idea. So hang on to that. Okay. The last thing I just want to note about these dreams before we move on is the whole story of Yosef is filled with dreams, right? There's dreams that come up later on when he's in jail and later on with Paro. But these opening dreams of Yosef, and Sima, I think we'll get to your point kind of at the end, they're different than all the other dreams that we see later on. There's no mention of God. There's no actual interpretation that's authoritative, right? Everyone's like kind of assuming Yosef's going to rule, but we don't have like, this is Hashem's interpretation of this dream. We don't have that. And as people mentioned, right, you know, it seems to be foreshadowing. We know that Yosef will come to power in Egypt through grain, and his brothers will end up bowing to him when they need grain. But what does it really mean? So what we're going to see over here is right now, his family is misreading and misinterpreting the dreams, and Yosef is also misinterpreting them. He's seeing them as confirmation bias that he is destined to rule everyone. And he's missing the actual message of the dreams, which he'll get only when he's at the end of his character growth. So with that, let's keep going through the different narratives, and we'll see kind of how Yosef's character develops until he finally gets that message of his dreams. So let's go to source number 5 over here. So this is basically leading up to the sale. And I'm sharing this really just to show 2 points in this section over here. Basically, Yaakov tells Yosef, your brothers, right, are in Shechem. He sends them to them. And it's interesting over here, and I underlined at the end of Pasuk Yud Gimel, by Yomar Lo Hineni. Yosef tells his father, I am here. I'm ready. And then there's a whole kind of like convoluted back and forth. You know, he has to try to find the brothers. The brothers aren't there. There's a man, you know, that, you know, who sees him wandering around and finally gives him directions. And the Ramban, you know, picks up on this and says, and I'll just read the end of it, source number 6, V'yaricha katuv bazeh. Why does the text kind of tell us this whole back and forth of Yosef wandering around trying to find the brothers? L'hagid ki sibot rabot ba'u elav she'haya ra'ui lachzor lo. There were so many points where Yosef could have turned around and said, this is impossible, I'm not going to find them, and he could have gone home, he could have called it off. Aval ha'kol saval l'chvod aviv. But he endured everything patiently in order to honor his father. And I think that there's this already we're seeing, you know, well, this is kind of like the first positive thing that we've seen, you know, about Yosef, that he's tremendous kind of sacrifice. He wants to do what his father says. And even that those words of Hineni, right, almost like language of destiny over here. Yosef knows that his brothers don't particularly like him. And now he's being sent off, you know, to see them. Even here we see that he's almost been separated from them a little bit, right? He's not really with the sheep anymore, and he's being sent out to them. And at the same time, he says, Hineni, though, this language of destiny, like Akedat Yitzchak, right? The same thing of kind of like the language of the Akedah, that he's willing to go. So I think it's important kind of to note that. I see just from the chat, yes, I hear that, as Ben is pointing out, right, what the brothers, and we're going to talk about that also, so that's coming up, so great point. And so we see a little bit of positive, you know, elements here of Yosef. And then we get to the actual sale. So let's skip down. my mouse over here. We're going to skip down now to the sale, which is source number 7. So a few things are happening over here in the sale. So number one, just to note kind of the different stages. The first thing that happens, they see him coming. Pasuk yotet vayomer isha lachiv hine bala chalamot halazeba. Here comes the dreamer. Va'ata lachu v'nahar gohu v'nishalcheu v'chata barot vayomer chaya ra'a chaltehu v'nireh mayu chalamotav. Let's take him, kill him, throw him in the pits. We'll say that a wild animal ate him, and then we'll see kind of what happens with the dream. So really the first plan is to kill him. Then Reuven steps in over here, Pasuk Chafet, Pasuk 22, and he basically, you know, convinces them, let's not kill them directly. Let's kill Yosef indirectly and throw him into the pits, even though Reuven has in mind that he's going to come later, right? The text tells us that, right? The end of Pasuk Chafet. That he's planning to come save him later. Meanwhile, you know, things continue to go on. They take off his coat. They throw him in the pit. They're sitting down for lunch. And now the plan changes because Yehuda steps up, Pasuk Chafav. And he says over here, what do we gain, right, by killing him instead, right? He's still our brother. We shouldn't actually kill him. You know, even indirectly, so we should just sell him, away. And there's a whole debate, we won't get into it now, right, who actually sells him to who and who buys him, is it the Ishmaelites, is it the Midianites, but Tachlis, he gets sold, and he ends up from there, brought down to Egypt, the brothers go back to the father, right, they dip the Ketonet Pasim, which was this mark of royalty, for Yosef, you know, they dip it in the blood and say again, you know, we'll examine, you know, whose tunic is this? Yaakov realizes it and cries over his son. And there's a few kind of important things, I think, that we see over here, right? That just for me, I think the part that's the most powerful is really the end. If you think of the juxtaposition between how we started with Yosef's dreams and these dreams of royalty, right? This expectation that he's going to be leading, that he's going to be ruling over everyone else. And how does the parak end? With the opposite of his dreams, right? He dreamt of rulership. Where is he now? In a pit, right? He was, you know, destined to lead his family. Now he's a slave, right? Stripped of his coat. And again, just seeing kind of that opposite of everything that's going in. And another point over here, I think if we scroll down over here to source 8, the Abar Banel, I think this is a little bit, Ben, what you were mentioning over here. And it's really the same idea. What has been motivating the brothers? Because for me, I think when we think a little bit about, you know, listen, everyone's responsible for their actions, right? But who's responsible for this sale? We spoke about this like pivotal moment in like, you know, Jewish identity of you know, the sale of Yosef. It's kind of like Mechirat Yosef and I would say like the Egel HaZahav, right? The golden calf and selling Yosef are kind of like the two huge sins, right? That we see that kind of like come up, that are mentioned kind of over and over again. And the Abar Banel mentions over here, you know, well, why? What motivated this? And he says over here, ki hu haya oker habayit ve'yoresh etzer ve'lo mishvat ha-bechora ki hu ha-ben ha-bechor la'ahuba. Right? That the sons realized when they saw how much that the Yaakov favored Yosef over the rest of them, they realized, you know, he's the oldest one, like, and he's the son of Yaakov's most beloved wife. And then, you know, as Ben mentioned over here, right, you look through the history of Sefer Bereishit, everything that happens is one son is chosen and everyone else is given a care package and sent on their way, right? And they realize that, you know, skip to the end over here. One of them is going to be inherited the brachot, the blessings, and the inheritance of the land. But who yeah Yosef, and it's going to be Yosef, and they are going to be rejected. It does not excuse their behavior. But there was this real, they really felt threatened. It seems like they probably felt threatened even before the dreams, but the dreams were kind of just the icing on the cake that, you know, we're about to get rejected here from the family. This is gonna, if we want to change our destiny, this is how we have to act. And it doesn't, you know, excuse it, but there's a lot that kind of went into kind of creating this situation over here. And as we said, the parak ends with the opposite of how the story began, right? Yosef stripped of his royalty, his you know, preferential treatment, and thrown in a pit. And with that, that gets us, as we continue, you know, the ups and downs of Yosef's trajectory. In the next scene, we're a little bit out of our parsha. Oh, no, we're still actually in our parsha for this. The journey to Potiphar's house. So over here, and we spoke a little bit about, you know, our whole goal here is to kind of to kind of like suss out Yosef's character growth, right? Where do we see growth in this sense? Because so far we saw a little bit, right, that he's trying to help his father. He's going to, you know, he puts himself in a situation that's not ideal in order to honor his father. But where do we see character growth? And I think we start to see it here in Perek Lametet. So all of a sudden, Yosef now is brought into the house of Potiphar, and he really rolls his sleeves up and puts himself to work. And he really tries to work hard in order to kind of raise himself and to, you know, and to succeed and to kind of make the best of the of a terrible situation that that he's in. And what's interesting over here, if you look through this section, is the text goes out of its way a little bit to tell us that the Hashem was the source of his success, that God was the source of his success. It's really the Mila Mancha, the repeated word that comes up over and over again. And I underlined it over here. You've seen Pasuk Bet. Ve'yashem et Yosef, ayhi ish matzliach. God's with Yosef and he succeeds, right? Vayar donav ki Hashem ito, his master sees that God is with him. V'kol asher hu oseh Hashem matzliach. Don't everything he touches, you know, God helps him and is successful. It comes up again, right? That like, you know, he sees, the master sees how Hashem is helping him. Vayhi birkat Hashem b'chol asher yeshlo v'vayitu fesadeh, where it's the house, whether it's in the field, Hashem is with, you know, Hashem is doing everything. What's interesting though is we never hear this from Yosef himself, right? It's kind of like the narrator tells us this. It's noticed by his master, but we never really hear Yosef acknowledge this moment or this idea that his success here is because of God and not just because of his own work. And it's interesting because, you know, again, Yosef seems to be working hard. He seems trying to make the best of things. But then we get to the end of Pasuk Vav over here, and we're told, Vayehi Yosef yafei toar v'yafei mareh. All of a sudden, we're commenting on Yosef's good looks again. Now, obviously, this is foreshadowing what's going to happen next, right? Eshet Potiphar is going to seduce or attempt to seduce Yosef, and he's going to reject her, but he still is going to end up in jail, right? Because then she's going to make up a lie to her husband, right, that Yosef tried to rape her, and then he gets thrown in jail. And this seems to be, it's like everything was going well. It's again, Yosef is like, he's on the rise, and then this incident happens with Eshet Potiphar, and all of a sudden he finds himself in jail. And when we think about it, almost in another pit.
Can
right?
I stop you for a moment?
Yes. Sure.
Do you believe at that time, if a slave comes and he's doing what she said he was trying to do, he will put in jail? He will be killed.
Good point. It's a good point.
Why,
right? That, like,
why is jail?
Things
why is
could
jail
have, things could have been worse.
Could things what should do should have been worse?
Yeah.
In general.
Yeah, for sure. And again, you could say that right. Also, right, is this Yad Hashem, right? Right? Is this, you know, Yosef, you know, had been investing in this 100%. But I think over here, and this is what I want to share, was Rav Amnon Bazak from Yeshivat Har Tzion shares two really interesting points about all of this. And he says, again, he says what I quoted before, this idea that the text really stresses that Yosef's successes are from God. But we don't really hear that from Yosef. He does acknowledge when Eshet Potiphar tries to seduce him. He says over here, right, Pasuk 9, he says over here, you know, like, listen, like, I can't be disloyal to my master, and how can I sin before God? But it's interesting, even like the master comes, you know, a little bit before God in that situation. But Rav Bazak points out that this was really a test, right? That it's almost like there's two tests that are going on. One is that, will Yosef allow himself to be seduced? And he passes a test, right? He refuses to be seduced by Eshet Potiphar. And that's kind of a success. But at the same time, Rav Bazak frames this as almost like an emuna test, like a faith test, that as for someone like him who's on this rise to power and someone who has this potential and who's going to be leading one day, are they going to be able to acknowledge that their success doesn't just come from their own talent, because they are exceptionally talented, but that it also comes from God, right? Do you see God in your success, or is it only coming because you worked hard? And I think, Chaim, as you pointed out, right, and I think this makes sense with this idea that it's a test, because, you know, if Yosef's not going to be, you know, again, right, you might expect, of course, a slave is going to be killed. But here, it's almost like he's being sent back to the pit, right? He's being sent back to jail to almost reflect on this, right? To kind of reflect on this idea, oh, like, yes, you climbed out of that actual pit before, you climbed up very high, and you're able to improve your status, but you also have to acknowledge God. And we're going to see that he does that later on, that you have to acknowledge God. And it's almost like, all right, you need a little bit more time to figure that out. Back to the pit with you. And now he gets sent to jail, almost that same idea. And Rabbi Zak points out as well, there's a lot of parallels with this story with Eshet Potiphar in Potiphar's house, and in the original story, when Yosef is sold. And he points out that, in both stories, you have a beged, you have a coat that's torn or torn off, right? Eshet Potiphar tears off, Yosef, or, he turns away and catches him by his garment and he gets ripped off, just like his coat is torn off by the brothers, right, before he's sold. The Dibra Ra'ah, right? We know originally Yosef was bringing slander, to his father about his brothers. And here Eshet Potiphar is slandering Yosef. And a lot, I think, of these, Rabbi Zak points out, I thought it was so interesting to think about. It's almost like I would say midah keneged midah, but this idea of almost a reminder to Yosef, right? There's this kind of theme going on here, of how you acted as a kid, you can't act like that anymore, right? You're getting older, right? And you have to kind of realize over here, there's going to be, as you continue to grow and as you have this potential to lead, you have to really acknowledge God. And there's these almost throwbacks to the original kind of immature Yosef. And we found over here, and I think I put this picture in, over here. Yeah. This idea over here of, success, like what people think success looks like and what it really looks like. And I think this is really what we're going to see with Yosef's growth, that like he goes up, he gets in a pit, he comes out, and then he gets thrown again now into jail. And now we're finally going to see, as Yosef turns his fortune around again in jail and manages to kind of get out, that now finally we're going to see his growth. Okay, here we go. So now we're jumping to Bereshit Mem. This is source number 12. And now we're going to meet some dreams again. And now we're finally going to see, I think Yosef growing even more in this sense. So here we go. Okay. So over here, this is, Yosef's in jail. He's in this pit again. And now, two of Paro's servants, who have been thrown in jail as well, are going to turn to Yosef to interpret his dreams, right? These are the famous dreams, the chief baker and the chief and Paro's steward, with the wine. But here already, and this I think gets back to what Rabbi Zak said before, if you look at Pasuk Chet, Pasuk 8, when they tell him that they've had dreams, what is Yosef's reaction? Vayomer aleihem Yosef, halola Elokim pitronim sipru nali. He says, surely God can interpret, tell me your dreams. And even though he's going to be the one to interpret them, right, first thing he says is recognizing Hashem. And that's the first time that we've seen that come from him and not coming from a narrator in this sense. And what's interesting over here is there's a real debate over, as we know, like in the story, they're going to tell their dreams. Yosef is going to interpret them perfectly, right? One of them will be pardoned and one of them is going to be executed. And he tells the one who's going to be pardoned, please don't forget me. Make sure to mention me to Paro and see if I can get taken out of here in Pasuk Tetvav. And he gives a little bit of an explanation. Ki ganov ganavti me'eretz ha'ivrim. I was stolen from the land of the Hebrews. V'gam po lo asiti me'uma. And even here, I didn't do anything. Ki samo ati babor, because they put me in a pit. Interesting here, Safari says dungeon, but he uses for him, it's a pit, right? Is it jail? Is it an actual pit? He's always kind of getting thrown out. And over here, there's a real debate over how was Yosef able to interpret these dreams? Was it just coming from his own acumen, his own intelligence, his own potential, or was this Hashem giving him the direct interpretation? So Nechama Leibowitz, actually in her studies in Bereshit, goes into this in great depth. But I just wanted to give you kind of one source from each side, which is interesting. So the Akedat Yitzchak, source number 13, says that really, obviously Hashem is always helping Yosef, but Yosef was very smart. And he listened to the gossip and he knew all the hawk and everything that was going on in court. And he was able to use that, right? Amnam nimshach Yosef et pitrona chalomot, achar masha kadam lo mahakaratam. He used what he already knew about these people. Maybe he was listening to the gossip when he was in Potiphar's house. And he knew their status and he knew their relationship with the kings. And he was able to figure it out. He was a smart guy and he was able to figure it out. Well, the Abarbanel comes and says, no. Ruach HaKodesh Hayami Asheret Yosef and Masha Patar. It was Ruach HaKodesh. It was all coming from Hashem. And I think over here, it doesn't have to be, you know, either or, you know. But what we've seen already here is, number one, Yosef is highly intelligent. He's using his acumen. It probably can be both. Hashem is helping him as well. And as we saw before, the character growth here, Yosef starts off, let's skip back over here, as we saw before, by saying, you know, God is interpreting here. Everything that I do, it's not just coming from me. This is coming from Hashem. Hashem is able to help me as well. And that's not something that we saw before. And now we finally have come full circle, and we're going to be able to finally bring everything together, right? We've seen Yosef. We've seen him, you know, his original immature sense with those dreams. We see him thrown in the pit by his brothers. We see him rise in Potiphar's house just to be thrown back in jail. And now we see that he's able to rise again, right, in achieving the status, even in jail, of this person who can interpret dreams, but who is also able to share it and able to acknowledge that this comes from God. Okay, with that, there is one more point before we actually get to Paro, which is, you know, we'll skip back a little bit over here, which is at the end of this, the cupbearer was supposed to remember Yosef, you know, and the second he got out, hopefully get Yosef out as well. But as we know, Yosef stays in jail for 2 more years. So why is it that he has to stay in jail for 2 more years? Why this kind of delay? So Rav Bazak, again, points out something here that I thought was brilliant, that we see the growth in this story, right? We see that Yosef acknowledges before he interprets dreams that it comes from God. But we read this line before in Pasuk Tet Vav over here, when he's giving his backstory and he asks the cupbearer to please remember him to Paro. He says, it's because when I was kidnapped from Eretz Ha'ivrim, when I was kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews, you know, I was the innocent victim. I was kidnapped. I didn't do anything. And even here, I didn't do anything when they threw me in the pit. And Rav Bazak points out over here, you know, we don't want to blame the victim, but I think that it's interesting to note, according to Rav Bazak, that Yosef has to recognize that he wasn't completely blameless, right? Obviously, nothing excuses throwing someone in a pit. But this idea that, you know, Yosef at this point in his character growth, especially when we said before, you know, there's so many parallels when he's in Potiphar's house, the incident with Potiphar, with what happened originally with the brothers, for Yosef to kind of, you know, think back to his 17-year-old self and to realize, wow, like that was not, I should not, you know, the way I told those dreams to my brothers, the way I was bringing the dibra ra'ah, right, the slander, you know, that contributed to a very negative family dynamic, you know, and to recognize he was definitely not the most guilty, but he wasn't completely innocent either. And I think that this, going back to that meme that I showed before, the success of the straight line and the squiggly line, this idea of character growth, of really Yosef's character being refined, because we know at the end of the story he's going to be this tremendous leader. How does he get there? That, yes, there's growth, but there's still elements. And it's almost like he's sent back to that pit for another 2 years, the jail pit, to reflect for 2 more years, that think back, you know, you got some time to think now. Were you completely innocent in what happened with your brothers? Is that really how you need to be acting? And to kind of have more of that time to reflect. And that's the point. That's the point over here. So with that, we jump to our second final scene over here, which is Paro's palace. So here we go. So now, finally, 2 years later, Yosef is brought out of the palace because Paro has had 2 dreams. And again, we see over here, Pasuk Tet Zayin, when Paro says, oh, I heard you know how to interpret dreams, by Ya'an Yosef et Paro lemor, biladi Elokim Ya'aneh et Shlom Paro. And he says, no, I'm not the one who's going to interpret it. It's going to be Hashem. Even though obviously he's going to be using his skills as well, we see over here the character growth. Paro tells us 2 dreams, right, that we all probably are very familiar with, right? The first one with the cows, the skinny cows, 7 skinny cows and the 7, you know, large cows, and the skinny cows are able to eat the larger cows, then there isn't really a difference. And then the same thing, or similar, it almost sounds like the same thing with the grain, right? The healthy grain, and the parched, the shriveled grain, and the shriveled grain eats the healthy grain. And Paro is stumped. His magicians are stumped. Nobody knows what to do. Yosef steps up and says, here's his chidush, here's his new idea, right? The dreams are the same, and you have been told by God what you're going to, you've been told what God is about to do. And he tells him, right, there's going to be seven good years, and then there's going to be 7 bad years. And the important part over here is all of a sudden Yosef shifts, and he's not just interpreting dreams, but now he switches to giving advice. Now we go to Pasuk Lamed Gimel over here, Pasuk 33, and he says, "Va'ata yireh paro ish navon v'chacham va'yishteu al eretz Mitzrayim." Take someone smart, take someone, you know, thoughtful, wise, and put him over the land of Egypt, and we're going to set up a way to prepare during the 7 good years for the 7 years of famine. We're going to gather food, and we're going to ration food, and it's going to be a reserve, and we're going to make sure that we can live through it. And I think when we think over here, like, where's all this coming from? Like, what's happening here? Number one, this is similar to what we said before, right? I'll just end over here that Paro turns, and it's, I think this was the point, right? Paro turns to his advisor, and he's like, oh, we're not going to find anyone better than him. Like, it should be you. He offers him the job. Yosef says yes. And how does it end? Vayelbash oto bigdei sheish. Vayasem revet hazahav al tzavaro. Yosef's ultimate rise out of the pit is complete. He's put basically in charge of the entire land of Egypt. And just like his original Ketonet Pasim was stripped off of him, he is now dressed in fine clothes, the big day sheish, you know, robes of royalty, and given kind of this gold chain around his neck. So what are we to do kind of with here with Yosef's switch, Yosef's rise for power? And Rabbi Zak, I'll quote him again, expands on this. And he says that, you know, even though Paro's dreams sound similar, and Yosef says, you know, oh, they're the same dream, but there's really a key difference in them. And he points out that as much as for the cows, the dream of the cows, when the skinny cows eat the larger cows, it says that the cows look the same. The skinny cows look the same. They didn't change. But if you look at the text, we can skip up a little bit over here. When it talks about the sheaves, it doesn't say that. Then when the skinny sheaves eat the larger sheaves, it doesn't say that they stayed skinny. It just doesn't mention kind of what happened at all. And Rabbi Zak points out, or his idea over here, which I thought again was very interesting to think about, was that the advice for what to do and how to survive, that the dreams weren't just predicting the famine, but the solution of how to get through the famine was coded into the dream. And Yosef was able to figure that out, again, with that combination of his own acumen, his own intelligence, but also being helped by God, which he is now recognizing. And he realizes that this is almost the key to the dream, right? This idea that, you know, with the cows are going to remain the same. There's not going to be a difference. But with the grain, you know, it doesn't say that they're going to remain the same. Maybe there's a way to survive. Let's collect the wheat, right? Maybe storing the sheaves is going to be a way. Maybe that's the key to blunting the famine, right? To impacting the famine. I didn't bring the source, but the Ketav VaKabbalah actually even reads the fact that Paro says that he awoke from the dream, that was a code, that was part of the code of the dream as well, for Yosef to recognize that Paro has to wake up, not just from a dream, but he has to wake up and act. That the only way to kind of start to stave off this famine is to step up and have dramatic national action in order to save his people. And I think over here, and this is going back to Rabbi Zak, that Yosef over here is really finally starting to recognize his role in all of this. We'll skip down a little bit. And his destiny, right? And this is what I was quoting before, and I'll just, you know, here we can see a quote from Rabbi Zak's interpretation. This is a later Parshat Miketz, right? He says that, you know, Paro doesn't dream the same dream twice, right? There were two separate dreams, two possible futures, depending on which course of action Paro is going to choose. This is source 16, right? There's the first one where you don't do anything, and, you know, that's the cows, and that's what's going to happen to the rest of the world. But there's a second possibility of the sheaves where you can really blunt the impact of the famine because we're going to store the food. And both options lie before Paro. And here I think is where really we see that Yosef recognizes his potential, but not just that, oh, I can get out of jail. I'm sure that was part of it. I can get out of jail and I can finally have a better life. But this kind of realization that, wow, like I can do something. I can have an impact. I can serve, right? This idea, and you can debate, you know, is it selfish, you know, at this point that he's just trying to get self-centered, he's just trying to get out of jail? Or is it kind of, because I think this is an important point also, and we'll take some comments that this, you know, Chaim, you mentioned this before, you know, of like what would happen to, you know, a servant back then, you know, who tried to seduce the master's wife. Think about in this situation, if Yosef fails, right? If he volunteers himself for this job, you know, to revamp, basically change the entire economy of Egypt and you know, rationalize food in order to save them, and it doesn't work, I don't think there's forget Paro is going to be an angry mob, you know, waiting for him. But Yosef sees over here that he has potential to serve and potential to impact for good. It's not just about ruling for power and having people bow down to you, but it's really this idea of being able to recognize your talents and use them for other people. And I brought source number 17. This is just, you know, in different attitudes towards leadership, there's also this approach that's called servant leadership, right? And I'll also read a quote over here. The servant leader is servant first. It begins with a natural feeling that one wants to serve. Then conscious choice brings one to aspire to lead. That person is sharply different from one who is a leader first, perhaps because of the need to assuage an unusual power drive or to acquire material possessions. The difference manifests itself in the care taken by the servant first to make sure that other people's highest priority needs are being served. And I think we can see already this giant leap from the Yosef who's, you know, telling these dreams as a kid, oh, you know, like probably imagining himself like, yeah, I'm going to be the ruler and everyone's going to bow down to me, to finally realizing what leadership means and what it means to take on your shoulders this idea that I'm going to be sustaining a nation over here. And we really kind of see this full circle. I see some questions. I'll respond to the questions in a second. I just want to wrap up this idea, and then we'll have a chance to unpack it and kind of share some ideas as well. And with this, we finally come full circle to his original dreams. And I want to go back to the original dreams, and I think people mentioned this a little bit before in the comments. Think about the original dreams that we saw, right? The first one was the sheaves bowing down to him, the grain bowing down to him, and then the stars, the sun, and the moon bowing down to him. We had said, you know, 45 minutes ago when we started the Shi'ur that Yosef misunderstood his dreams. Everyone did. Everyone just assumed that these dreams meant that everyone is bowing down to Yosef and he's in charge. But I want to close here with an idea from Rav Elchanan Samet, who's a teacher at Machon Herzog. And he shares something fascinating over here about what the real message of the dreams were. And he says over here, he goes back here, this is source number 18 over here. And he says that, here, we'll just read the underlined part. This is the stage during which the brothers go down to Egypt and the family is reunited there in order to survive the years of famine by Yosef's hand. Thus, the entire story of Yosef is spread before us from beginning to end, all rolled up in this dream. And he points out over here this idea, I didn't really read the first part over here, but the idea of, you know, the brothers, you know, the brother sheaves all bowing down to Yosef sheaves. What exactly was that talking about? And he explains over here that the dreams are really a metaphor. If the cows aren't real cows in Paro's dreams, then the sheaves bowing down to Yosef sheave in his original dream doesn't have to be bowing. Like the metaphor means that bowing doesn't actually have to mean bowing. And Rav Samet sees it as bowing equals dependence. So what does he mean over here? That in the first dream, it's really about the future. When the brother sheaves are all bowing down to Yosef, it's not because he's going to rule over them. It's showing that the brother's economic dependence is going to really rest on Yosef during the famine and continuing on while they're in Goshen. Right? The sheaves represent here produce and bread. And the dream wasn't really about that Yosef was going to have this great power. I mean, he would have this power. But really, it was similar to the – he only recognizes this later on when he sees the dreams with Paro. But it was a charge to Yosef. You're going to be the one who's going to support your family economically, right? We'll talk another time about all the back and forth with the brothers and the – you know, when they come to Egypt and Yosef disguises himself. But ultimately, when they reunite at the end, Yosef takes care of the brothers. He takes care of the family and he makes sure that they have food and sustenance. And it's not about power, but it's about using your power and your position to not just make sure Egypt is taken care of, but to make sure that your family is taken care of. That's the first one. And then Rav Samet goes on to explain the second one with the sun and the moon and the stars bowing down to Yosef. He views this not as, again, bowing down to power, but he says, where else have we seen stars? Stars come up in Avraham's dream, right? The idea, not Avraham's dream, but then the promise to Avraham that the B'nai Yisrael will be as numerous as the stars in the sky. So he views, Rav Samet views the second dream of the sun, the moon, and the stars bowing down to Yosef as being spiritual dependence. That Yosef is going to be the one that doesn't just take care economically of his brothers and of the family. But the one who has to really make sure, you know, as they start to get closer and closer to slavery in Egypt, the Jewish people are able to keep a certain separateness, right? Yosef is the one that Yaakov has promised, you know, to him that he's going to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. He'll be brought back out and buried in Israel. But it really means that he has to take care of the national spiritual existence of Am Yisrael in exile. And I'll just read this last line over here, the last paragraph. Yosef came to learn that dreams sent from heaven do not come just to compliment a person and foretell a shining future that awaits him. Rather, they foretell the future in order that the person properly prepare himself for the mission that he will have to undertake. Such dreams always have purpose and demand that a person be ready to act and assume the burden. And I think over here, I'll end with one last idea, and then I'm happy to pause, and I'd love to hear ideas, you know, reactions over here. Just to recap what we've seen so far. We started off, beginning of our parsha, Yosef as a na'ar, Yosef as a kid. He has great potential, but immaturity in how he acts with his brothers. He's superficial in seeing what he wants in his dreams of him ruling over others. Then we see the rupture, the sale of Yosef. The brothers feel so threatened that they feel that they have to kill him. You know, they end up talking themselves down to, we're going to sell him instead. And Yosef goes from the potential ruler to a slave in a pit. Then Potiphar's house. We see Yosef picks himself up by his bootstraps. He's able to succeed. God is helping him. But Yosef doesn't recognize that yet. And we saw a lot of those parallels back to the sale, right? The dibra ra'ah, the slander, right? Here it's Eshet Potiphar slandering Yosef. We see the torn garment, just like the torn coat. And Yosef finds himself thrown in the pit, even though there was good character growth, to reflect a little bit that your success, your talent, you have to recognize that it comes from God.
No, I had something on in the background.
Oh, no, I'm at home. Continues on from that, right? Then in jail, right, we see this idea that Yosef has to wait even two more years, perhaps as Rabbi Zak had said, because Yosef has to acknowledge that he also contributed a little bit to the family dynamic with him being sold, with how he acted as a kid. Finally, we see that the growth, Yosef mentioning in jail that all the interpretations of his dream, of the dreams, come from God. He shares that with Paro as well. And finally, we see the switch, that Yosef realizes this isn't just about interpreting dreams. It's not just about my talent, but I can use this to serve. I can use this to serve Mitzrayim. And finally, the dreams of his youth come into full picture. It was never about bowing. It was about Yosef being there later on in Egypt. It was foretelling this idea that Yosef is going to have the responsibility to support his brothers and support them financially, support them with sustenance, not first with the sheaves, right? First in the economic sphere. And then the second dream, the sun, the moon, and the stars, that Yosef's also going to take care of them spiritually and make sure that Am Yisrael is in a good place. And he realizes that all along, the original dreams were not about ruling, but they were about service. And that real leadership is providing for his family and the world. And it's so much more than just ruling, but really what you use with this power. And I want to end with just something that I think also shows full circle and Yosef's growth, that there's an interesting the way that Sefer Bereishit ends, or one of the pieces right at the end of Sefer Bereishit, is that this idea that the brothers come to Yosef after Yaakov's death to tell Yosef, Yosef, you should know that Yaakov told us before he died that you have to forgive us and don't punish us for selling you. There's a whole debate in the Mefarshim. Did Yaakov actually tell him that? Are the brothers just making it up? But the brothers were scared to a certain sense that Yosef might, you know, he was waiting till his father would die. Now he's really going to get even. Now he's really going to get even with the brothers. And when they go to him, and Yosef obviously is crying over here. But they go and they say, you know, that, you know, Yaakov told us that, you know, our father told us that you have to forgive us. What's interesting over here is that according to the Ramban, and I brought this as the final source over here, the Ramban says that Yosef never told Yaakov what happened. Yosef never told Yaakov that, I mean, why did Yosef cry when the brothers said this to him? Because he knew that they were just scared that he was going to take revenge, because he knew there's no way Yaakov ever told them, you know, make sure that you get your brother to forgive you, because Yosef knew he had never told Yaakov that the brothers had sold him. And I thought that was just very powerful. And I'll end with just a quote from Rabbi Zak, because Rabbi Zak says, if you think about it, how did this story begin with Yosef? The story with Yosef began with Yosef bringing the Divra Ra'ah, the slander from his brothers to Yaakov, right? Telling on his brothers to Yaakov, telling Yaakov all the different negative things they were doing. How does the story end in the full arc of Sefer Bereishit? Is us finding out that the ultimate crime, the ultimate Divra Ra'ah that Yosef probably would have been justified in telling his father, he never shares, that at least according to the Ramban, that he never actually shares, this negative thing, the terrible thing that the brothers did of selling him. He never actually tells Yaakov, and he does almost tshuva gemura, this idea that he started off with slandering his brothers, but at the end of his life, he's already at a place where he's like, this isn't what I do anymore. This isn't how I lead. This isn't who I am. And I think that when we think about this model of Yosef as a leader, and the character growth, it doesn't just give this, you know, much richer elements to how we read these parshiot and how we read the story of Yosef. But I think even today, you know, you can look in the news, a lot of different things, a lot of different commentaries being written about leaders, you know, in all countries of the world. And, you know, look at any college campus and all the different leadership courses one can take and one can learn about. And I think it can be very powerful just to look in our own texts, in our own traditions, to see the story of Yosef, which is really the ultimate story of leadership, of someone learning to lead and recognizing that real leadership is service and is helping others and is using one's potential to better the world. And I'm so that's kind of the official shiur. And I'd love to, we have a few minutes left, and I'd love just to hear reactions, questions, comments, things that you noticed as we went through the text about Yosef's leadership, about his character growth, about his arc. And if anyone has other thoughts, and I included at the end as well, just some further articles that you can read that go through these points as well. So if anyone has any reactions, thoughts, please feel free to post in the chat.
Could you tell us about the reactions to Ramban's incredible suggestion that Yaakov Avinu didn't know the truth?
I remember I did this as a parsha shiur with my students once when I was still teaching in high school, and I asked them, do you think that Yaakov ever knew that Yosef was, that the brothers sold Yosef? Because I agree with you. I think it's such a tremendous thing to really think about. Personally, for me, I wonder that, like, even if Yosef never told him, did Yaakov have his suspicions? You know, like, I feel like there are a lot of hints there with everything that went through, that sometimes you don't need someone to say something to realize what happens. But I think this idea that even if Yaakov might have figured out, Yosef felt, at least according to the Ramban, I don't need to, especially with everything going on between the brothers, you know, and that's the future parshas, but that he didn't need to stir things up again. He didn't need to be the one to formally say it. Like, if people know, they know, but we don't need to say it formally. But I agree with you. It's a tremendous kind of idea here by the Ramban.
That would show real kippur for the sin of the diba.
He exactly.
Had the opportunity exactly. of committing diba again, and he avoided it. So yeah. He's doing tshuva, according to the.
Do you see a parallel from Yosef growth to Yaakov's achievement?
So
Yaakov's life is also up and down.
Yeah, 100%. Right. I think we see it. You know, one other theme that, you know, this is go back a few weeks in Bereishit, but, you know, Yaakov, for whatever reason, you can justify it or not justify it, right? Yaakov takes the bechor, takes the blessing, right? The bracha and tricks Yitzchak for it. And for the rest of his life, Yaakov is continuously tricked, you know? And I think there's this idea that sometimes you might have to take certain actions, but actions in Tanakh very much have consequences. And I think that's something that we see, right, a little bit, you know, with Yaakov, that he sees that, he recognizes he gets tricked with his wives, he gets tricked with the sheep, he gets tricked by his sons, right, with the sale of Yosef. It's a good question. I'm not sure. I think with Yosef, you really see the growth. I don't remember who wrote this. It was an article I read once. It was someone from Yeshivat Haaretzion, that Yaakov actually retreats. That Yaakov almost kind of retreats in his grief, retreats in everything that happens. So I don't know. I don't know if you see the growth, or with Yaakov, it's more that he ends up stepping back, and then the brothers or the sons kind of have to step up more. But it would be an interesting thing to think about, you know, and kind of research, like looking at those parallels.
Yaakov retreats. The change takes place when he has the fight with Balak. He changes his name.
Yeah. Nikki, I see a hand.
Yeah, I think that not only does Yosef not get thrown in a pit because of Potiphar's wife, he ends up in the royal jail, which is only for the top people. I think Potiphar knew his wife, and
he knew it wasn't a complete. He knew it wasn't the truth. He wasn't. He had to do something, a token something, but it wasn't gonna. Yeah. That's a good point, right? I do think there's interesting imagery of like the up and the down, but maybe it's more like stairs. You know, like it's not exactly the pits, but it's like, right, you know, you're getting up, a little bit of a step down, a little bit up, another step down, and kind of that slower growth. But yes, thank you.
I agree with the lady what she said about Potiphar. He knew. Probably was not the first time that he came to his ears. Otherwise, he would have killed him.
Right. It's a good point. Probably was not the first incident that this happened.
I agree with the Ramban that Yaakov didn't know, because Yaakov was very straight with his family and very straight with his children. And I think he definitely would have blasted them if he really thought that they did anything.
It's a good point, right? Because he in the brachot at the end, right? He comes out against Shimon and Levi. You know, like he gives it to people if they. You're right. Like and he doesn't mention that, right? The idea of Yosef, that would have for sure that would have come up in a big way. And I wonder also, right? If Yosef felt not just as a tikkun for the dibra ra'ah, but that if this had been brought to light, could the family ever recover? You know, that like, you know, Yosef makes peace with it, with his brothers, and they, you know, the whole test with Benjamin, they're able to kind of like find a way to move forward. But I don't know if that like officially came to light. It's a good point, right? With Yaakov, would the rupture just be too big? You know, would the family be able to come back together? So. All right. Any final thoughts, final points? Okay. My email is on the source sheet, so please be in touch if anyone has any further questions. Thank you so much for coming out tonight to learn. And again, thank you so much to Rabbi Kelman and Torah in Motion for putting together tonight's Shi'ur. Everyone should have a Shabbat Shalom and hopefully a Shabbat of peace, good news from Israel. And thank you so much.
Thank you. Yasha Kolak, that's really good. Thank you
so much.
Thank you. Great class.